Harper Audio presents Desperate Duchesses by Eloisa James, performed by Rosalind Landor. A Prelude. November, 1780. Estate of the Marquis of Wharton and Malmesbury. Knowing precisely why no one wants to marry you is slim consolation for the truth of it. In Lady Roberta St. Giles's case, the evidence was all too clear, as was her lack of suitors. The cartoon reproduced in Rambler's magazine depicted Lady Roberta with a hunched back and a single brow across her bulging forehead. Her father knelt beside her, imploring passers-by to find him a respectable spouse for his daughter. At least that part was true. Her father had fallen to his knees in the streets of Bath, precisely as depicted. To Roberta's mind, the Rambler's label of Mad Marquis had a certain accuracy about it as well.
Inbreeding, her father had said when she flourished the magazine at him. They assume your physique is affected by the sort of inbreeding that produces these characteristics. Interesting. After all, you could have been dangerously mad, for example, or...
But, Papa, she wailed, couldn't you make them print a retraction? I am not misshapen. Who would wish to marry me now?
Why, sweet pea, you are entirely lovely, he said, knitting his brow. I shall write a paean on your beauty and publish it in Ramblers. I will explain precisely why I was so distraught and include a commentary about the practices of hardened rakehells.
Rambler's magazine printed the Marquis's 818 lines of reproving verse, describing the nefarious gallant who had kissed Roberta in public without so much as a by your leave. They resurrected the offensive print as well, buried somewhere in the Marquis's raging stanzas describing the peril of walking Bath streets was a description of his daughter. Tell the blithe graces as they bound, luxuriant in the buxom round, that they're not more elegantly free than Roberta, only daughter of a Marquis. In vain did Roberta point out that elegantly free said little of the condition of her back, and that buxom round made her sound rather plump.
It implies all that needs to be said, the Marquis said serenely. Every man of sense will immediately ascertain that you have a charmingly luxurious figure, elegant features, and a good dowry, not to mention your expectations from me. I cleverly pointed to your inheritance, do you see?
All Roberta could see was a line declaring that her dowry was a peach tree.
That's for the rhyme, her father had said, looking a bit cross now. Dowry doesn't rhyme with many words, so I had to rhyme dowry and peach tree. The tree is obviously a synecdoche.
When Roberta looked blank, he added impatiently,
a figure of speech in which something small stands for the whole. The whole is the estate of Wharton and Malmesbury, and you know perfectly well that we have at least 11 peach trees. My nephew will inherit the estate, but the orchards are unentailed and will go to you.
Perhaps there were clever men who deduced from the Marquis's poem that his daughter had 11 peach trees and a slender figure, but not a single one of those men turned up in Wiltshire to ascertain for himself. The fact that the original cartoon remained on display in the windows of Humphrey's print shop for many months may also have been a consideration. But since the Marquis refused to undertake another trip to the city wherein his daughter was accosted,
"You'll thank me for that later,"
he added rather obscurely. Lady Roberta St. Giles found herself heading quickly toward that undesirable stage of life known as old maid. 2 years passed. Every few months, Roberta's future would pass before her eyes, a life spent copying and cataloguing her father's poems, when not alphabetizing rejection letters from publishers for use by the Marquis's future biographers, and she would rebel. In vain did she reason, implore, or cry. Even threatening to burn every poem in the house had no effect. It wasn't until she snatched a copy of For the Custards Mary Brought Me and threw it in the fire that her father understood her seriousness. And only by withholding the single remaining copy of the custard poem did she gain permission to attend the New Year's ball being held by Lady Chumley.
"We'll have to stay overnight," her father said,
his lower lip jutting out with disapproval.
"We'll go by ourselves," Roberta said, "without Mrs. Grope."
"Without Mrs. Grope!"
He opened his mouth to bellow, but,
"Papa, you do want me to have some attention, don't you? Mrs. Grope will cast me entirely in the shade."
"Hmm.
I shall need a new dress."
"An excellent thought. I was in the village the other day, and one of Mrs. Parthenol's children was running about the square looking blue with cold. I've no doubt but that she could use your custom."
She barely opened her mouth before he lifted his hand.
"You wouldn't want a gown from some other mantua maker, dearest. You're not thinking of poor Mrs. Parthenol and her 8 children."
"I am thinking," Roberta said, "of Mrs. Parthenol's bungled bodices."
But her father frowned at that, since he had strong views about the shallow nature of fashion, and even stronger views about supporting the villagers, no matter how inferior their products.